after a little this spring, but it would be dangerous, especially for Grover.
Goat Boy scares me,
Tyson murmured. I stared at him. Tyson had faced down fire-breathing bulls and sea monsters and cannibal giants. Why would you be scared of Grover?
Hooves and horns, Tyson muttered nervously. And goat fur makes my nose itchy.
And that pretty much ended our Grover conversation. Before dinner, Tyson and I went down to the sword arena. Quintus was glad to have company. He still wouldn't tell me what was in the wooden crates, but he did teach me a few sword moves. The guy was good. He fought the way some people play chess, like he was putting all the moves together and you couldn't see the pattern until he made the last stroke and won with a sword at your throat. Good try, he told me, but your guard is too low. He lunged and I blocked. Have you always been a swordsman? I asked. He parried my overhead cut. I've been many things. He jabbed and I sidestepped. His shoulder straps slipped down and I saw that mark on his neck, the purple blotch. But it wasn't a random mark. It had a definite shape, a bird with folded wings, like a quail or something. What's that on your neck? I asked, which was probably a rude question, but you could blame my ADHD. I tend to just blurt things out. Quintus lost his rhythm. I hit his sword hilt and knocked the blade out of his hand. He rubbed his fingers. Then he shifted his armor to hide the mark. It wasn't a tattoo, I realized. It was an old burn, like he'd been branded. A reminder. He picked up his sword and forced a smile. Now, shall we go again? He pressed me hard, not giving me time for any more questions. While he and I fought, Tyson played with Mrs. O'Leary, who he called the Little Doggy. They had a great time wrestling for the bronze shield and playing Get the Greek. By sunset, Quintus hadn't even broken a sweat, which seemed kind of strange, but Tyson and I were hot and sticky, so we hit the showers and got ready for dinner. I was feeling good. It was almost like a normal day at camp. Then dinner came, and all the campers lined up by cabin and marched into the dining pavilion. Most of them ignored the sealed fissure in the marble floor at the entrance, a 10-foot-long jagged scar that hadn't been there last summer, but I was careful to step over it.
Big crack,
Tyson said when we were at our table.
Earthquake, maybe?
No, I said, not an earthquake. I wasn't sure I should tell him. It was a secret only Annabeth and Grover and I knew. But looking in Tyson's big eye, I knew I couldn't hide anything from him. Nico DeAngelo, I said, lowering my voice. He's this half-blood kid we brought to camp last winter. He asked me to guard his sister on a quest, and I failed. She died. Now he blames me. Tyson frowned.
So he put a crack in the floor?
These skeletons attacked us, I said. Nico told them to go away, and the ground just opened up and swallowed them. Nico... I looked around to make sure no one was listening. Nico is a son of Hades. Tyson nodded thoughtfully.
The god of dead people.
Yeah.
So the Nico boy is gone now?
I guess. I tried to search for him this spring, so did Annabeth, but we didn't have any luck. This is secret, Tyson, okay? If anyone found out he was a son of Hades, he would be in danger. You can't even tell Chiron.
The bad prophecy,
Tyson said.
Titans might use him if they knew.
I stared at him. Sometimes it was easy to forget that as big and childlike as he was, Tyson was pretty smart. He knew that the next child of the big three gods, Zeus, Poseidon, or Hades, who turned 16, was prophesied to either save or destroy Mount Olympus. Most people assume that meant me. But if I died before I turned 16, the prophecy could just as easily apply to Nico. Exactly, I said. So,
mouth sealed,
Tyson promised.
Like the crack in the ground.
I had trouble falling asleep that night. I lay in bed listening to the waves on the beach and the owls and monsters in the woods. I was afraid once I drifted off, I'd have nightmares. See, for half-bloods, dreams are hardly ever just dreams. We get messages. We glimpse things that are happening to our friends or enemies. Sometimes we even glimpse the past or the future. And at camp, my dreams were always more frequent and vivid. So I was still awake around midnight, staring at the bunk bed mattress above me when I realized there was a strange light in the room. The saltwater fountain was glowing. I threw off the covers and walked cautiously toward it. Steam rose from the hot salt water. Rainbow colors shimmered through it, though there was no light in the room except for the moon outside. Then a pleasant female voice spoke from the steam.
"Please deposit 1 drachma.
I looked over at Tyson, but he was still snoring. He sleeps about as heavily as a tranquilized elephant. I didn't know what to think. I'd never gotten a collect iris message before. 1 golden drachma gleamed at the bottom of the fountain. I scooped it up and tossed it through the mist. The coin vanished.
"Oh, Iris, goddess of the rainbow," I whispered. "Show me, whatever you need to show me."
The mist shimmered. I saw the dark shore of a river. Wisps of fog drifted across black water. The beach was strewn with jagged volcanic rock. A young boy squatted at the riverbank, tending a campfire. The flames burned an unnatural blue color. Then I saw the boy's face. It was Nico D'Angelo. He was throwing pieces of paper into the fire. Mythomagic trading cards, part of the game he'd been obsessed with last winter. Nico was only 10, or maybe 11 by now, but he looked older. His hair had grown longer. It was shaggy and almost touched his shoulders. His eyes were dark. His olive skin had turned paler. He wore ripped black jeans and a battered aviator's jacket that was several sizes too big, unzipped over a black shirt. His face was grimy, his eyes a little wild. He looked like a kid who'd been living on the streets. I waited for him to look at me. No doubt he'd get crazy angry, start accusing me of letting his sister die. But he didn't seem to notice me. I stayed quiet, not daring to move. If he hadn't sent this iris message, who had? Nico tossed another trading card into the blue flames.
"Useless," he muttered. "I can't believe I ever liked this stuff."
"A childish game, master," another voice agreed.
It seemed to come from near the fire, but I couldn't see who was talking. Nico stared across the river. On the far shore was black beach shrouded in haze. I recognized it. The underworld. Nico was camping at the edge of the River Styx.
"I've failed," he muttered. "There's no way to get her back."
The other voice kept silent. Nico turned toward it doubtfully.
"Is there? Speak."
Something shimmered. I thought it was just firelight. Then I realized it was the form of a man. A wisp of blue smoke, a shadow. If you looked at him head on, he wasn't there. But if you looked out of the corner of your eye, you could make out his shape, a ghost.
"It has never been done," the ghost said, "but there may be a way."
"Tell me,"
Nico commanded. His eyes shined with a fierce light.
"An exchange," the ghost said. "A soul for a soul."
I've offered.
Not yours, the ghost said. You cannot offer your father a soul he will eventually collect anyway, nor will he be anxious for the death of his son. I mean a soul that should have died already. Someone who has cheated death.
Nico's face darkened. Not that again. You're talking about murder.
I'm talking about justice, the ghost said. Vengeance.
Those are not the same thing. The ghost laughed dryly.
You will learn differently as you get older.
Nico stared at the flames. Why can't I at least summon her? I want to talk to her. She would help me.
I will help you, the ghost promised. Have I not saved you many times? Did I not lead you through the maze and teach you to use your powers? Do you want revenge for your sister or not?
I didn't like the ghost's tone of voice. He reminded me of a kid at my old school, a bully who used to convince other kids to do stupid things like steal lab equipment and vandalize the teacher's cars. The bully never got in trouble himself, but he got tons of other kids suspended. Nico turned from the fire so the ghost couldn't see him, but I could. A tear traced its way down his face. Very well. You have a plan?
Oh, yes, the ghost said, sounding quite pleased. We have many dark roads to travel. We must start.
The image shimmered. Nico vanished. The woman's voice from the mist said, Please deposit 1 drachma for another 5 minutes. There were no other coins in the fountain. I grabbed for my pockets, but I was wearing pajamas. I lunged for the nightstand to check for spare change, but the iris message had already blinked out, and the room went dark again. The connection was broken. I stood in the middle of the cabin, listening to the gurgle of the saltwater fountain and the ocean waves outside. Nico was alive. He was trying to bring his sister back from the dead, and I had a feeling I knew what soul he wanted to exchange. Someone who had cheated death. Vengeance. Nico D'Angelo would come looking for me. Chapter 3. We play tag with scorpions. The next morning, there was a lot of excitement at breakfast. Apparently, around 3 in the morning, an Ethiopian dracone had been spotted at the borders of the camp. I was so exhausted, I slept right through the noise. The magical boundaries had kept the monster out, but it prowled the hills looking for weak spots in our defenses, and it didn't seem anxious to go away until Lee Fletcher from Apollo's cabin led a couple of his siblings in pursuit. After a few dozen arrows lodged in the chinks of the dracone's armor, it got the message and withdrew.
It's still out there, Lee warned us during announcements. 20 arrows in its hide, and we just made it mad. The thing was 30 feet long and bright green. Its eyes...
He shuddered.
You did well, Lee.
Kyron patted him on the shoulder.
Everyone stay alert, but stay calm. This has happened before.
Aye, Quintus said from the head table. And it will happen again, more and more frequently.
The campers murmured among themselves. Everyone knew the rumors. Luke and his army of monsters were planning an invasion of the camp. Most of us expected it to happen this summer, but no one knew how or when. It didn't help that our attendance was down. We only had about 80 campers. 3 years ago, when I'd started, there had been more than 100. Some had died. Some had joined Luke. Some had just disappeared.
This is a good reason for new war games, Quintus continued with a glint in his eyes. We'll see how you all do with that tonight.
Yes, Chiron said. Well, enough announcements. Let us bless this meal and eat.
He raised his goblet.
To the gods.
We all raised our glasses and repeated the blessing. Tyson and I took our plates to the bronze brazier and scraped a portion of our food into the flames. I hope the gods liked raisin toast and Fruit Loops.
Poseidon, I said. Then I whispered, help me with Nico and Luke and Grover's problem.
There was so much to worry about, I could have stood there all morning, but I headed back to my table. Once everyone was eating, Chiron and Grover came over to visit. Grover was bleary-eyed. His shirt was inside out. He slid his plate onto the table and slumped next to me. Tyson shifted uncomfortably.
I will go, polish my fish ponies.
He lumbered off, leaving his breakfast half-eaten. Chiron tried for a smile. He probably wanted to look reassuring, but in centaur form, he towered over me, casting a shadow across the table.
Well, Percy, how did you sleep?
Fine. I wondered why he asked that. Was it possible he knew something about the weird iris message I'd gotten?
I brought Grover over, Chiron said, because I thought you two might want to, discuss matters. Now, if you'll excuse me, I have some iris messages to send. I'll see you later in the day.
He gave Grover a meaningful look, then trotted out of the pavilion. What's he talking about? I asked Grover. Grover chewed his eggs. I could tell he was distracted because he bit off the tines of his fork and chewed those down too.
He wants you to convince me, he mumbled.
Somebody else slid next to me on the bench. Annabeth. I'll tell you what it's about, she said. The labyrinth. It was hard to concentrate on what she was saying, because everybody in the dining pavilion was stealing glances at us and whispering, and Annabeth was right next to me. I mean, right next to me. You're not supposed to be here, I said. We need to talk, she insisted. But the rules? She knew as well as I did that campers weren't allowed to switch tables. Satyrs were different. They weren't really demigods. But the half-bloods had to sit with their cabins. I wasn't even sure what the punishment was for switching tables. I'd never seen it happen. If Mr. D had been here, he probably would have strangled Annabeth with magical grapevines or something, but Mr. D wasn't here. Chiron had already left the pavilion. Quintus looked over and raised an eyebrow, but he didn't say anything. Look, Annabeth said, Grover is in trouble. There's only one way we can figure to help him. It's the labyrinth. That's what Clarice and I have been investigating. I shifted my weight, trying to think clearly. You mean the maze where they kept the Minotaur back in the old days? Exactly, Annabeth said. So it's not under the king's palace in Crete anymore, I guessed. The labyrinth is under some building in America. See? It only took me a few years to figure things out. I knew that important places moved around with Western civilization, like Mount Olympus being over the Empire State Building and the underworld entrance being in Los Angeles. I was feeling pretty proud of myself. Annabeth rolled her eyes. Under a building? Please, Percy. The labyrinth is huge. It wouldn't fit under a single city, much less a single building. I thought about my dream of Nico at the River Styx. So, is the labyrinth part of the underworld? No, Annabeth frowned. Well, there may be passages from the labyrinth down into the underworld. I'm not sure, but the underworld is way, way down. The labyrinth is right under the surface of the mortal world, kind of like a second skin. It's been growing for thousands of years, lacing its way under western cities, connecting everything together underground. You can get anywhere through the labyrinth.
If you don't get lost, Grover muttered, and die a horrible death.
Grover, there has to be a way, Annabeth said. I got the feeling they'd had this conversation before.
Clarice lived?
Barely, Grover said. And the other guy?
He was driven insane. He didn't die.
Oh, joy.
Grover's lower lip quivered.
That makes me feel much better.
Whoa, I said. Back up. What's this about Clarice and a crazy guy? Annabeth glanced over toward the Aries table. Clarice was watching us like she knew what we were talking about, but then she fixed her eyes on her breakfast plate.
Last year, Annabeth said, lowering her voice, Clarice went on a mission for Chiron.
I remember, I said. It was secret. Annabeth nodded. Despite how serious she was acting, I was happy she wasn't mad at me anymore, and I kind of liked the fact that she'd broken the rules to come sit next to me.
It was secret, Annabeth agreed, because she found Chris Rodriguez.
The guy from the Hermes cabin? I remembered him from 2 years ago. We'd eavesdropped on Chris Rodriguez aboard Luke's ship, the Princess Andromeda. Chris was one of the half-bloods who'd abandoned camp and joined the Titan army.
Yeah,
Annabeth said. Last summer, he just appeared in Phoenix, Arizona, near Clarice's mom's house.
What do you mean he just appeared?
He was wandering around in the desert in 120 degrees, in full Greek armor, babbling about string.
String?
I said. He'd been driven completely insane. Clarice brought him back to her mom's house so the mortals wouldn't institutionalize him. She tried to nurse him back to health. Chiron came out and interviewed him, but it wasn't much good. The only thing they got out of him? Luke's men have been exploring the labyrinth.
I shivered, though I wasn't sure exactly why.
Poor Chris. He hadn't been that bad a guy. What could have driven him mad?
I looked at Grover, who was chewing up the rest of his fork.
Okay, I asked. Why were they exploring the labyrinth?
We weren't sure, Annabeth said. That's why Clarice went on a scouting expedition. Chiron kept things hushed up because he didn't want anyone panicking. He got me involved because, well, the labyrinth has always been one of my favorite subjects. The architecture involved?
Her expression turned a little dreamy.
The builder, Daedalus, was a genius. But the point is, the labyrinth has entrances everywhere. If Luke could figure out how to navigate it, he could move his army around with incredible speed.
Except it's a maze, right?
Full of horrible traps, Grover agreed. Dead ends, illusions, psychotic goat-killing monsters.
But not if you had Ariadne's string, Annabeth said. In the old days, Ariadne's string guided Theseus out of the maze. It was a navigation instrument of some kind, invented by Daedalus. And Chris Rodriguez was mumbling about string.
So Luke is trying to find Ariadne's string, I said. Why? What's he planning?
Annabeth shook her head. I don't know. I thought maybe he wanted to invade camp through the maze, but that doesn't make any sense. The closest entrances Clarice found were in Manhattan, which wouldn't help Luke get past our borders. Clarice explored a little way into the tunnels, but it was very dangerous. She had some close calls. I researched everything I could find about Daedalus. I'm afraid it didn't help much. I don't understand exactly what Luke's planning, but I do know this. The labyrinth might be the key to Grover's problem.
I blinked. You think Pan is underground?
It would explain why he's been impossible to find.
Grover shuddered.
Satyrs hate going underground. No searcher would ever try going in that place. No flowers, no sunshine, no coffee shops.
But, Annabeth said, the labyrinth can lead you almost anywhere. It reads your thoughts. It was designed to fool you, to trick you and kill you. But if you can make the labyrinth work for you,
it could lead you to the wild god, I said.
I can't do it.
Grover hugged his stomach.
Just thinking about it makes me want to throw up my silverware.
Grover, it may be your last chance, Annabeth said. The council is serious. 1 week, or you learn to tap dance.
Over at the head table, Quintus cleared his throat. I got the feeling he didn't want to make a scene, but Annabeth was really pushing it, sitting at my table so long.
We'll talk later.
Annabeth squeezed my arm a little too hard. Convince him, will you? She returned to the Athena table, ignoring all the people who were staring at her. Grover buried his head in his hands.
I can't do it, Percy. My searcher's license. Pan, I'm gonna lose it all. I'll have to start a puppet theater.
Don't say that. We'll figure something out. He looked at me teary-eyed.
Percy, you're my best friend. You've seen me underground. In that Cyclops' cave? Do you really think I could...
His voice faltered. I remembered the sea of monsters. When he'd been stuck in a Cyclops' cave. He'd never liked underground places to begin with, but now Grover really hated them. Cyclopes gave him the creeps, too. Even Tyson. Grover tried to hide it, but Grover and I could sort of read each other's emotions because of this empathy link Grover had made between us. I knew how he felt. Grover was terrified of the big guy.
I have to leave, Grover said miserably. Juniper's waiting for me. It's a good thing she finds cowards attractive.
After he was gone, I looked over at Quintus. He nodded gravely, like we were sharing some dark secret. Then he went back to cutting his sausage with a dagger. In the afternoon, I went down to the Pegasus stables to visit my friend Blackjack.
Yo, boss!
He capered around in his stall, his black wings buffeting the air.
You bring me some sugar cubes?
You know those aren't good for you, Blackjack.
Yeah, so you brought me some, huh?
I smiled and fed him a handful. Blackjack and I went back a long way. I sort of helped rescue him from Luke's demon cruise ship a few years ago, and ever since, he's insisted on repaying me with favors.
So, we got any quests coming up?
Blackjack asked.
I'm ready to fly, boss.
I patted his nose. Not sure, man. Everybody keeps talking about underground mazes. Blackjack whinnied nervously.
Nuh-uh. Not for this horse. You ain't gonna be crazy enough to go in no maze, boss, are you? You'll end up in the glue factory.
You may be right, Blackjack. We'll see. Blackjack crunched down his sugar cubes. He shook his mane like he was having a sugar seizure.
Whoa, good stuff. Well, boss, you come to your senses and want to fly somewhere. Just give a whistle. Old Blackjack and his buddies will stampede anybody for you.
I told him I'd keep it in mind. Then a group of younger campers came into the stables to start their riding lessons, and I decided it was time to leave. I had a bad feeling I wasn't going to see Blackjack for a long time. That night after dinner, Quintus had us suit up in combat armor like we were getting ready for Capture the Flag, but the mood among the campers was a lot more serious. Sometime during the day, the crates in the arena had disappeared, and I had a feeling whatever was in them had been emptied into the woods.
Right, Quintus said, standing on the head dining table. Gather round.
He was dressed in black leather and bronze. In the torchlight, his gray hair made him look like a ghost. Mrs. O'Leary bounded happily around him, foraging for dinner scraps.
You will be in teams of two, Quintus announced.
When everybody started talking and trying to grab their friends, he yelled,
"Which have already been chosen."
"Ah!"
everybody complained.
"Your goal is simple. Collect the gold laurels without dying.
The wreath is wrapped in a silk package tied to the back of one of the monsters. There are 6 monsters. Each has a silk package. Only one holds the laurels. You must find the wreath before the other teams, and of course, you will have to slay the monster to get it and stay alive.
The crowd started murmuring excitedly. The task sounded pretty straightforward. Hey, we'd all slain monsters before. That's what we trained for.
I will now announce your partners, Quintus said. There will be no trading, no switching, no complaining.
Oof!
Mrs. O'Leary buried her face in a plate of pizza. Quintus produced a big scroll and started reading off names. Beckendorf would be with Selena Beauregard, which Beckendorf looked pretty happy about. The Stoll brothers, Travis and Connor, would be together, no surprise. They did everything together. Clarice was with Lee Fletcher from the Apollo cabin. Melee and ranged combat combined. They would be a tough combo to beat. Quintus kept rattling off the names until he said,
Percy Jackson with Annabeth Chase.
Nice. I grinned at Annabeth. Your armor is crooked, was her only comment, and she redid my straps for me.
Grover Underwood, Quintus said, with Tyson.
Grover just about jumped out of his goat fur.
What? But...
No, no,
Tyson whimpered.
Must be a mistake, goat boy.
No complaining, Quintus ordered. Get with your partner. You have 2 minutes to prepare.
Tyson and Grover both looked at me pleadingly. I tried to give them an encouraging nod and gestured that they should move together. Tyson sneezed. Grover started chewing nervously on his wooden club.
They'll be fine, Annabeth said. Come on, let's worry about how we're going to stay alive.
It was still light when we got into the woods, but the shadows from the trees made it feel like midnight. It was cold, too, even in summer. Annabeth and I found tracks almost immediately, scuttling marks made by something with a lot of legs. We began to follow the trail. We jumped a creek and heard some twigs snapping nearby. We crouched behind a boulder, but it was only the Stoll brothers tripping through the woods and cursing. Their dad was the god of thieves, but they were about as stealthy as water buffaloes. Once the Stolls had passed, we forged deeper into the west woods where the monsters were wilder. We were standing on a ledge overlooking a marshy pond when Annabeth tensed.
This is where we stopped looking.
It took me a second to realize what she meant. Last winter, when we'd been searching for Nico DeAngelo, this is where we'd given up hope of finding him. Grover, Annabeth, and I stood on this rock, and I'd convinced them not to tell Chiron the truth, that Nico was a son of Hades. At the time, it seemed the right thing to do. I wanted to protect his identity. I wanted to be the one to find him and make things right for what had happened to his sister. Now, 6 months later, I hadn't even come close to finding him. It left a bitter taste in my mouth. I saw him last night, I said. Annabeth knit her eyebrows.
What do you mean?
I told her about the Iris message. When I was done, she stared into the shadows of the woods.
He's summoning the dead? That's not good.
The ghost was giving him bad advice, I said, telling him to take revenge.
Yeah, spirits are never good advisors. They've got their own agendas, old grudges, and they resent the living.
He's going to come after me, I said. The spirit mentioned a maze.
She nodded. That settles it. We have to figure out the labyrinth.
Maybe, I said uncomfortably. But who sent the Iris message? If Nico didn't know I was there?
A branch snapped in the woods.
Dry leaves rustled. Something large was moving in the trees, just beyond the ridge.
That's not the Stoll brothers, Annabeth whispered.
Together, we drew our swords. We got to Zeus's Fist, a huge pile of boulders in the middle of the West Woods. It was a natural landmark where campers often rendezvoused on hunting expeditions, but now there was nobody around.
"Over there," Annabeth whispered. "No, wait," I said, "behind us."
It was weird. Scuttling noises seemed to be coming from several different directions. We were circling the boulders, our swords drawn, when someone right behind us said,
"Hi."
We whirled around, and the tree nymph Juniper yelped.
"Put those down," she protested. "Dryads don't like sharp blades, okay?"
"Juniper," Annabeth exhaled. "What are you doing here?"
"I live here."
I lowered my sword. "In the boulders?" She pointed toward the edge of the clearing.
"In the juniper. Duh."
It made sense, and I felt kind of stupid. I'd been hanging around dryads for years, but I never really talked to them much. I knew they couldn't go very far from their tree, which was their source of life, but I didn't know much else.
"Are you guys busy?" Juniper asked.
"Well," I said, "we're in the middle of this game against a bunch of monsters, and we're trying not to die."
"We're not busy," Annabeth said. "What's wrong, Juniper?"
Juniper sniffled. She wiped her silky sleeve under her eyes.
"It's Grover. He seems so distraught. All year he's been looking for Pan, and every time he comes back, it's worse. I thought maybe, at first, he was seeing another tree."
"No," Annabeth said, as Juniper started crying.
"I'm sure that's not it."
"He had a crush on a blueberry bush once,"
Juniper said miserably.
"Juniper,"
Annabeth said, "Grover would never even look at another tree. He's just stressed out about his searcher's license."
"He can't go underground," she protested. "You can't let him."
Annabeth looked uncomfortable. It might be the only way to help him, if we just knew where to start. Juniper wiped a green tear off her cheek.
"About that."
Another rustle in the woods, and Juniper yelled,
"Hide!"
Before I could ask why, she went poof into green mist. Annabeth and I turned. Coming out of the woods was a glistening amber insect, 10 feet long, with jagged pincers, an armored tail, and a stinger as long as my sword. A scorpion. Tied to its back was a red silk package.
"One of us gets behind it,"
Annabeth said, as the thing clattered toward us.
"Cuts off its tail, while the other distracts it in front."
"I'll take point," I said.
"You've got the invisibility hat."
She nodded. We'd fought together so many times we knew each other's moves. We could do this easy. But it all went wrong when the other two scorpions appeared from the woods.
"Three?"
Annabeth said.
"That's not possible. The whole woods and half the monsters come at us?"
I swallowed. One we could take. Two, with a little luck. Three, doubtful. The scorpions scurried toward us, whipping their barbed tails like they'd come here just to kill us. Annabeth and I put our backs against the nearest boulder.
"Climb?"
I said.
"No time,"
she said. She was right. The scorpions were already surrounding us. They were so close, I could see their hideous mouths foaming, anticipating a nice juicy meal of demigods.
"Look out!"
Annabeth parried away a stinger with the flat of her blade. I stabbed with Riptide, but the scorpion backed out of range. We clambered sideways along the boulders, but the scorpions followed us. I slashed at another one, but going on the offensive was too dangerous. If I went for the body, the tail stabbed downward. If I went for the tail, the thing's pincers came from either side and tried to grab me. All we could do was defend, and we wouldn't be able to keep that up for very long. I took another step sideways, and suddenly, there was nothing behind me. It was a crack between two of the largest boulders, something I'd probably passed by a million times, but...
"In here,"
I said.
Annabeth sliced at a scorpion, then looked at me like I was crazy. In there? It's too narrow. I'll cover you. Go. She ducked behind me and started squeezing between the two boulders. Then she yelped and grabbed my armor straps, and suddenly I was tumbling into a pit that hadn't been there a moment before. I could see the scorpions above us, the purple evening sky and the trees, and then the hole shut like the lens of a camera, and we were in complete darkness. Our breathing echoed against stone. It was wet and cold. I was sitting on a bumpy floor that seemed to be made of bricks. I lifted Riptide. The faint glow of the blade was just enough to illuminate Annabeth's frightened face and the mossy stone walls on either side of us.
Where are we?
Annabeth said. Safe from scorpions, anyway. I tried to sound calm, but I was freaking out. The crack between the boulders couldn't have led into a cave. I would have known if there was a cave here. I was sure of it. It was like the ground had opened up and swallowed us. All I could think of was the fissure in the dining room pavilion where those skeletons had been consumed last summer. I wondered if the same thing had happened to us. I lifted my sword again for light. "It's a long room," I muttered. Annabeth gripped my arm. "It's not a room, it's a corridor." She was right. The darkness felt emptier in front of us. There was a warm breeze, like in subway tunnels, only it felt older, more dangerous somehow. I started forward, but Annabeth stopped me.
"Don't take another step," she warned. "We need to find the exit."
She sounded really scared now.
"It's okay," I promised. "It's right."
I looked up and realized I couldn't see where we'd fallen in. The ceiling was solid stone. The corridor seemed to stretch endlessly in both directions. Annabeth's hand slipped into mine. Under different circumstances, I would have been embarrassed, but here in the dark, I was glad to know where she was. It was about the only thing I was sure of.
"Two steps back," she advised.
We stepped backward together like we were in a minefield.
"Okay," she said. "Help me examine the walls."
"What for?"
"The mark of Daedalus," she said,
as if that was supposed to make sense.
Okay. What kind of..."
"Got it," she said with relief. She set her hand on the wall and pressed against a tiny fissure, which began to glow blue. A Greek symbol appeared, the ancient Greek delta. The roof slid open, and we saw a night sky, stars blazing. It was a lot darker than it should have been. Metal ladder rungs appeared in the side of the wall, leading up, and I could hear people yelling our names.
"Percy! Annabeth!"
Tyson's voice bellowed the loudest, but others were calling out too. I looked nervously at Annabeth. Then we began to climb. We made our way around the rocks and ran into Clarice and a bunch of other campers carrying torches.
"Where have you two been?" Clarice demanded. "We've been looking forever."
"But we were only gone a few minutes," I said. Chiron trotted up, followed by Tyson and Grover.
"Percy," Tyson said. "You are okay?"
"We're fine," I said. "We fell in a hole." The others looked at me skeptically, then at Annabeth.
"Honest," I said.
"There were three scorpions after us, so we ran and hid in the rocks, but we were only gone a minute."
"You've been missing for almost an hour," Chiron said. "The game is over."
"Yeah," Grover muttered. "We would have won, but a cyclops sat on me."
"Was an accident,"
Tyson protested, and then he sneezed. Clarice was wearing the gold laurels, but she didn't even brag about winning them, which wasn't like her.
"A hole," she said suspiciously.
Annabeth took a deep breath. She looked around at the other campers. Kyron, maybe we should talk about this at the big house? Clarice gasped. You found it, didn't you? Annabeth bit her lip. Yeah, we did. A bunch of campers started asking questions, looking about as confused as I was, but Kyron raised his hand for silence.
Tonight is not the right time, and this is not the right place.
He stared at the boulders as if he just noticed how dangerous they were.
All of you, back to your cabins. Get some sleep. A game well played, but curfew is past.
There was a lot of mumbling and complaints, but the campers drifted off, talking among themselves and giving me suspicious looks.
This explains a lot, Clarice said. It explains what Luke is after.
Wait a second, I said. What do you mean? What did we find? Annabeth turned toward me, her eyes dark with worry.
An entrance to the labyrinth. An invasion route straight into the heart of the camp.
Chapter 4. Annabeth breaks the rules. Kyron had insisted we talk about it in the morning, which was kind of like, hey, your life's in mortal danger. Sleep tight. It was hard to fall asleep, but when I finally did, I dreamed of a prison. I saw a boy in a Greek tunic and sandals crouching alone in a massive stone room. The ceiling was open to the night sky, but the walls were 20 feet high and polished marble, completely smooth. Scattered around the room were wooden crates. Some were cracked and tipped over, as if they'd been flung in there. Bronze tools spilled out of one. A compass, a saw, and a bunch of other things I didn't recognize. The boy huddled in the corner, shivering from cold, or maybe fear. He was spattered in mud. His legs, arms, and face were scraped up as if he'd been dragged here along with the boxes. Then the double oak doors moaned open. Two guards in bronze armor marched in, holding an old man between them. They flung him onto the floor in a battered heap.
Father!
The boy ran to him. The man's robes were in tatters. His hair was streaked with gray, and his beard was long and curly. His nose had been broken. His lips were bloody. The boy took the old man's head in his arms.
What did they do to you?
Then he yelled at the guards.
I'll kill you!
There will be no killing today, a voice said.
The guards moved aside. Behind them stood a tall man in white robes. He wore a thin circlet of gold on his head. His beard was pointed like a spear blade. His eyes glittered cruelly.
You helped the Athenian kill my Minotaur, Daedalus. You turned my own daughter against me.
You did that yourself, Your Majesty, the old man croaked.
A guard planted a kick in the old man's ribs. He groaned in agony. The young boy cried, Stop!
You love your maze so much, the king said. I have decided to let you stay here. This will be your workshop. Make me new wonders, amuse me. Every maze needs a monster. You shall be mine.
I don't fear you, the old man groaned.
The king smiled coldly. He locked his eyes on the boy.
But a man cares about his son, huh? This pleased me, old man, and the next time my guards inflict a punishment, it will be on him.
The king swept out of the room with his guards, and the doors slammed shut, leaving the boy and his father alone in the darkness.
What will we do? The boy moaned. Father, they will kill you.
The old man swallowed with difficulty. He tried to smile, but it was a gruesome sight with his bloody mouth.
Take heart, my son.
He gazed up at the stars.
I will find a way.
A bar lowered across the doors with a fatal boom, and I woke in a cold sweat. I was still feeling shaky the next morning when Chiron called a war council. We met in the sword arena, which I thought was pretty strange, trying to discuss the fate of the camp while Mrs. O'Leary chewed on a life-size squeaky pink rubber yak. Chiron and Quintus stood at the front by the weapon racks. Clarice and Annabeth sat next to each other and led the briefing. Tyson and Grover sat as far away from each other as possible. Also present around the table, Juniper the Tree Nymph, Selena Beauregard, Travis and Connor Stoll, Beckendorf, Lee Fletcher, even Argus, our hundred-eyed security chief. That's how I knew it was serious. Argus hardly ever shows up unless something really major is going on. The whole time Annabeth spoke, he kept his 100 blue eyes trained on her so hard his whole body turned bloodshot. Luke must have known about the labyrinth entrance, Annabeth said. He knew everything about camp. I thought I heard a little pride in her voice, like she still respected the guy, as evil as he was. Juniper cleared her throat.
Ahem. That's what I was trying to tell you last night. The cave entrance has been there a long time. Luke used to use it.
Selena Beauregard frowned. You knew about the labyrinth entrance, and you didn't say anything? Juniper's face turned green.
I didn't know it was important. Just a cave. I don't like yucky old caves.
She has good taste, Grover said.
I wouldn't have paid any attention except, well, it was Luke.
She blushed a little greener. Grover huffed.
Forget what I said about good taste.
Interesting.
Quintus polished his sword as he spoke.
And you believe this young man, Luke, would dare use the labyrinth as an invasion route?
Definitely, Clarice said. If he could get an army of monsters inside Camp Half-Blood, just pop up in the middle of the woods without having to worry about our magical boundaries, we wouldn't stand a chance. He could wipe us out easy. He must have been planning this for months.
He's been sending scouts into the maze, Annabeth said. We know because we found one.
Chris Rodriguez, Chiron said.
He gave Quintus a meaningful look.
Ah, Quintus said. The one in the... Yes, I understand.
The one in the what? I asked. Clarice glared at me.
The point is, Luke has been looking for a way to navigate the maze. He's searching for Daedalus's workshop.
I remembered my dream the night before. The bloody old man in tattered robes.
The guy who created the maze.
Yes, Annabeth said. The greatest architect. The greatest inventor of all time. If the legends are true, his workshop is in the center of the labyrinth. He's the only one who knew how to navigate the maze perfectly. If Luke managed to find the workshop and convince Daedalus to help him, Luke wouldn't have to fumble around searching for paths or risk losing his army in the maze's traps. He could navigate anywhere he wanted, quickly and safely. First to Camp Half-Blood to wipe us out, then to Olympus.
The arena was silent, except for Mrs. O'Leary's toy yak getting disemboweled.
Squeak! Squeak!
Finally, Beckendorf put his huge hands on the table.
Back up a second, Annabeth. You said convince Daedalus. Isn't Daedalus dead?
Quintus grunted. I would hope so. He lived, what, 3,000 years ago? And even if he were alive, don't the old stories say he fled from the labyrinth?
Chiron clopped restlessly on his hooves.
That's the problem, my dear Quintus. No one knows. There are rumors. Well, there are many disturbing rumors about Daedalus. But one is that he disappeared back into the labyrinth toward the end of his life. He might still be down there.
I thought about the old man I'd seen in my dream. He looked so frail, it was hard to believe he'd last another week, much less 3,000 years.
"We need to go in," Annabeth announced. "We have to find the workshop before Luke does. If Daedalus is alive, we convince him to help us, not Luke. If Ariadne's string still exists, we make sure it never falls into Luke's hands."
"Wait a second," I said. "If we're worried about an attack, why not just blow up the entrance, seal the tunnel?"
"Great idea," Grover said. "I'll get the dynamite."
"It's not so easy, stupid," Clarice growled. "We tried that at the entrance we found in Phoenix. It didn't go well."
Annabeth nodded. "The labyrinth is magical architecture, Percy. It would take huge power to seal even one of its entries. In Phoenix, Clarice demolished a whole building with a wrecking ball, and the maze entrance just shifted a few feet. The best we can do is prevent Luke from learning to navigate the labyrinth."
"We could fight," Lee Fletcher said. "We know where the entrance is now. We can set up a defensive line and wait for them. If an army tries to come through, they'll find us waiting with our bows."
"We will certainly set up defenses," Chiron agreed. "But I fear Clarice is right. The magical borders have kept this camp safe for hundreds of years. If Luke manages to get a large army of monsters into the center of camp, bypassing our boundaries, we may not have the strength to defeat them."
Nobody looked real happy about that news. Chiron usually tried to be upbeat and optimistic. If he was predicting we couldn't hold off an attack, that wasn't good.
"We have to get to Daedalus's workshop first," Annabeth insisted. "Find Ariadne's string and prevent Luke from using it."
"But if nobody can navigate in there," I said, "what chance do we have?"
"I've been studying architecture for years," she said. "I know Daedalus's labyrinth better than anybody."
"From reading about it?"
"Well, yes."
"That's not enough."
"It has to be."
"It isn't.
Are you going to help me or not?"
I realized everyone was watching Annabeth and me like a tennis match. Mrs. O'Leary's squeaky yak went eek as she ripped off its pink rubber head. Chiron cleared his throat.
"First things first. We need a quest. Someone must enter the labyrinth, find the workshop of Daedalus, and prevent Luke from using the maze to invade this camp."
"We all know who should lead this," Clarice said. "Annabeth."
There was a murmur of agreement. I knew Annabeth had been waiting for her own quest since she was a little kid, but she looked uncomfortable.
"You've done as much as I have, Clarice," she said. "You should go too."
Clarice shook her head.
"I'm not going back in there."
Travis Stoll laughed.
"Don't tell me you're scared, Clarice. Huh, chicken?"
Clarice got to her feet. I thought she was going to pulverize Travis, but she said in a shaky voice,
"You don't understand anything, punk. I'm never going in there again. Never."
She stormed out of the arena. Travis looked around sheepishly.
"I didn't mean to..."
Chiron raised his hand.
"The poor girl has had a difficult year. Now, do we have agreement that Annabeth should lead the quest?"
We all nodded except Quintus. He folded his arms and stared at the table. But I wasn't sure anyone else noticed.
"Very well."
Chiron turned to Annabeth.
"My dear, it's your time to visit the Oracle. Assuming you return to us in one piece, we shall discuss what to do next."
Waiting for Annabeth was harder than visiting the Oracle myself. I'd heard it speak prophecies twice before. The first time had been in the dusty attic of the big house, where the spirit of Delphi slept inside the body of a mummified hippie lady. The second time, the Oracle had come out for a little stroll in the woods. I still had nightmares about that. I'd never felt threatened by the Oracle's presence,
but I'd heard stories. Campers who'd gone insane, or who'd